Welcome to Film Wax Radio, the independent film talk show. Every week we're joined by filmmakers, actors, journalists, programmers, and others to chat about the state of independent film. Today my guest is programmer Tom Powers, the mastermind behind Doc NYC, which is going to begin tomorrow, Thursday, November 8th, and continuing through the following Thursday, November 15th. The festival takes place at two locations here in New York City. The first is IFC Center and the other is the SVA Theater on West 23rd Street. You can visit www.docnyc.net to purchase tickets, and I advise you to do so. But Tom is also well-known for many other things. For one thing, he and his wife run a Stranger Than Fiction documentary series at the IFC Center, which has been going on for a number of years. Additionally, Tom is the documentary programmer at the Toronto International Film Festival. He is a guest programmer at Miami International Film Festival. He also programs with his wife, Rafaela Niehausen, the Montclair Film Festival. All this and much, much more. And I welcome Tom Powers to the show.
So thanks very much, considering what has transpired in the last week with Hurricane Sandy, and also just hours away from the beginning of Doc NYC.
Don't say hours, days.
Well, you know, I'm trying to speak as though this were maybe hours.
Gotcha,
away,
right.
You know, days away from Doc NYC, third season. Was approaching the third season different than the prior two seasons? Obviously, the first season was just that.
Well, we had some foundation to build on. We had some experience to look at and see what had worked for us in our first 2 years and what we could improve on. So what's new this year? Let's ask that. We have a new partnership with the School of Visual Arts. We're using their wonderful SVA Theater on 23rd Street, which gives us a lot more seats to fill than we had before. We created a couple new sections this year. We created a section called Sonic Cinema, devoted to music documentaries of many different stripes. So in the Sonic Cinema section, there's a film about Big Star. There's a film with Pete Seeger and the Greenwich Village music scene. Pete Seeger is supposed to be here on the weekend for that. There's a film I really like called Music Wood about guitar makers who are trying to figure out how to continue making guitars, since so much of the wood that is used for a guitar is near extinction. So just a lot of great music documentaries, in fact, not just in the Sonic Cinema section, but throughout the festival. In fact, our opening night film is Artifact with Jared Leto and the band 30 Seconds to Mars. That film won the People's Choice Award at the Toronto Film Festival, and this is its U.S. premiere. And you'll find other music films in other sections. So that stands out as something new. Another smaller section we created this year is called Photography on Film, which kind of continues a mandate that we laid out in the first year of the festival, and that we want to be intersecting with other documentary fields, not just film, but photography and writing, and so this year we've got these three events in photography on film, including a partnership with the Seven Photo Agency, where a lot of the great photographers in the Seven Photo Agency have increasingly been doing video work that they're going to showcase.
Do you try to seek out or identify trends in documentary filmmaking when it comes to programming Doc NYC, certainly, but maybe even, I mean, also you're the documentary programmer, correct, for Toronto International Film Festival and three or four or five other documentary film festivals.
So, well, I also consult for the Miami Film Festival in March, and then my wife and I started a film festival, not only documentaries, but an all-round film festival in Montclair, New Jersey.
Because you weren't busy enough.
Takes place in May. Yeah, well, what can I say? We're a glutton for doing it. Trends in documentary. I mean, I try to be attuned to lots of things that are happening, and I think that there are always several things happening at once. I think, 10 years ago, it was easier to detect, a certain trend in documentary filmmaking. But now there's such a prolific output of documentary filmmaking that, I talked about music documentaries, but I could just as easily talk about social issue documentaries or personal documentaries. All these things are happening at once at a great output.
When you were figuring the schedule this year, how soon did it occur to you that this Thursday evening's premiere evening launch and gala, all that, would either be an enormous celebration or perhaps a kind of coming together to commiserate?
Being 2 days after the election.
Yeah.
The earlier incarnations of DocNYC, I should say the first two years of DocNYC started on earlier dates. I think last year we started on November 2nd, and last year when we were planning, we looked at the calendar, knew that November 6th was going to be an election night, didn't want to overlap that, and so specifically started 2 days after. We thought starting 1 day after would be kind of too close. People would be too wiped out from whatever election day brought, and now we'll be 2 days later. It's among all the kinds of anxiety and suspense that hang above the lead up to a festival, and this year all the more so because of Hurricane Sandy, the election, which is as we speak taking place tomorrow, just adds another twist. Maybe by the time people are listening to this, they'll know what's happened, but I wish you people in the future could whisper a little clue to us stuck in the past.
We didn't talk about Stranger Than Fiction yet, but which is a series that you and your wife Rafaela also program. But how early in do you start to put together a festival like DocNYC?
With DocNYC, we are kind of keeping our eyes open year round, I would say. I think the first film that I knew we were going to show is a film called The Informant, which is in the Viewfinder's competition section of 10 films representing diverse perspectives in documentary. Informant is a film that was shown to me very early last year. It's about a guy named Brandon Darby who people may know if they ever saw the film Better This World.
Well, of course they saw it because it was a POV film.
That's right. So for people who saw Better This World, they'll remember the story of these two young men from Austin, Texas, who wound up going to prison for plotting to build Molotov cocktails during the 2004 Republican convention. And in that film, it kind of came out that these two young men were sort of, partly encouraged to do this, according to them, by this other activist in their community named Brandon Darby. What they didn't know is that Brandon Darby at that time was working as an informant for the FBI and informed on the FBI, which led to the arrest of these two young men. So there's a big question mark hanging over this case. Would these two young men have even gone so far down a path of trouble that they got themselves into if it hadn't been for the encouragement of Brandon Darby? He's a fascinating psychological study. His trajectory was that he started out as a very prominent activist on the left after Hurricane Katrina. He did some wonderful things in New Orleans helping to organize after Hurricane Katrina, and was considered, kind of prominent figure in that activist community. And then some things occurred in his life that changed him. Today he kind of represents himself as a very right-wing figure. So this film called The Informant looks at that And when I saw the film early last year, I knew right away that I wanted to show it at DocNYC.
What are some of the, well, I'm glad you brought up The Informant. What are some of the other films that you had that similar reaction to that are part of the
program? You know, I would say...
Without suggesting that you're showing favorites or anything. This is just purely...
You know, the film Shenandoah, which is a world premiere at DocNYC, This is by the Pulitzer Prize-winning photographer, David Turnley. David, actually, the very first DocNYC in 2010, showed a clip of Shenandoah. Shenandoah is a film about a small-town murder case where a Latino young man was killed by members of the local high school football team. And David Turnley really got into this community in a way that, you know, most journalists could never really penetrate. Mm-hmm. And so this is a film that I've been tracking for a couple of years. It's a film that has the support of the Sundance Institute. And we're really pleased to be showing its world premiere.
Do you also have a section called the shortlist? Which I actually was not aware of.
So the shortlist section is 10 films that many of which have already played theatrically, a couple of which are still due to come out later on this year. And these are 10 films that that we think are going to be very worthy of awards consideration at the end of the year. And we wanted to give audiences, you know, another chance to have a look at them. You know, we've also found in our programming that even films that have gotten a lot of attention, critical attention, take a film like Searching for Sugar Man or a film like The Imposter or Five Broken Cameras that won a jury prize at Sundance. You know, those are films that people may have read reviews about, heard to talk about from film festivals, but maybe still need an extra chance to see them before the end of the year. And so, you know, DocNYC is uniquely positioned in November, and so it's a time for kind of looking back on this year, taking stock at what were some of the, you know, the films that that got some attention and could use some more.
And I wanted to mention in that list of the within the short list is West of Memphis, which, like The Informant, harkens to a prior documentary.
Right. West of Memphis is about the West Memphis 3, the case that was really brought to the public's attention first in the film's Paradise Lost. And in West of Memphis is executive produced by Peter Jackson and his wife Fran. They had become aware of this case because of the first Paradise Lost film, and became so angered, really, to know that these three young men, despite overwhelming evidence of their innocence, had been imprisoned for, you know, many, many years, that Peter and Fran really put a lot of resources into opening a new investigation to help set them free. And along the way, they reached out to the filmmaker Amy Berg, who previously was Oscar-nominated for her film Deliver Us from Evil. And Amy started making trips down to Arkansas, where this story is set, several years ago, and started following this case. And West of Memphis really tells the story of the efforts to reopen an investigation that led to a quite dramatic result last year.
It wasn't, so it's not necessarily refuting anything in the
Paradise Lost films. No, I think it.
But this one has Damien Echols' cooperation, doesn't it? He's on
Damien Echols, one of the West Memphis three, who had been on death row for 18 years. He and his wife, Lori Davis, worked closely with the filmmakers. They have credits. They have producing credits on the film. Mm-hmm. And when someone asked Damien at the Toronto Film Festival, where I showed this film, you know, what interested him in being part of this film, he said that it was a chance for him to tell the story in his own words. You know, he's had a lot of other people tell his story in books and articles and films. You know, there's a fiction film that's in the works right now by Adam Egoyan about the story, and wow, you know, and many other incarnations. And Damien wanted to have his own voice, which I think is very understandable.
You know, especially for someone who is exposed to as many POV documentaries as I am, you see many films about the justice system, how it does not serve so many. What was so shocking about that story in particular was how it can happen here in the States. And
well, listen, not only in the States. I think some of us look to the West Memphis 3 story and say, well, this is a case of, you know, Southern justice, and, you know, and that, you know, that can only happen because it's a small town. But we have another film by Ken Burns and his daughter Sarah Burns and her husband David McMahon. That film is The Central Park Five, which looks at an equally horrifying case of injustice that took place right here in New York City, around one of the highest profile crimes of the last 25 years. That is the Central Park Jogger case, where five young men were convicted, imprisoned, and only many years later did someone else come forward and admit to the crime. And once that happened, it became, you know, in retrospect, it became so evident how railroaded the Central Park Five had been. You know, however, you know, at the time the Central Park Five were being tried, you know, the media spent weeks and months really vilifying them. And then when it came out that they were innocent, that was a story that lasted for about one day in the media. You know, very unequal treatment in terms of mm-hmm. tearing down these the reputations of these young men, and then compared to any effort made to restore them. So Ken Burns' film, Central Park Five, really is remarkable at dissecting just how that could happen. How can that happen in New York City, which is the media capital of the country, if not the world, where you know, skepticism is supposed to be in the blood of every New Yorker, and yet it could happen here. It just is easily as it happened in Arkansas.
And it's interesting that the film ends up getting more media attention.
Well,
the film itself. And
the Central Park Five has gotten some very interesting, perhaps unwanted attention lately, in that the city of New York, which is for many years has been dragging out a lawsuit that the Central Park Five brought against the city for wrongful conviction. And for, you know, for some serious missteps that happened in that case, legal missteps. And the city's response to that, you know, has not been to say, sorry, you know, we robbed you of years of your life, the most vital years of your life, your 20s. We're going to do something to compensate you for that. On the contrary, they've dragged out a lawsuit. I think it's been going on for 8 years now or more. And so as part of that lawsuit, the city is right now trying to subpoena the outtakes of the film, Central Park Five, on the grounds that they think it could somehow help their case. I think the city is really, their lawyers, is really overplaying its hand here, mm-hmm. but that's where it stands right now. The, you know, filmmakers have resisted this, and it's currently in the courts.
They don't know what they're up against. When you take on the documentary filmmaking community, you are...
Well, you're dealing with some pretty tenacious bastards.
To say the least, yeah.
Sarah Burns wrote a book about this case. Sarah's been following this case, I think, for close to 10 years. She started out working as an intern at the law firm that represented the Central Park Five, and she became aware of the case then. She wrote a book about it, and then collaborated on this film with her father, Ken Burns, and her husband, David McMahon. David McMahon has been a collaborator with Ken Burns on other films as well.
And so can you, since we've talked about the closing night film, let's also just mention, since it's open in front of you, the, in your program there, the opening night film about a pair of sisters known to many.
Well, this year we did something unusual, and we chose two opening night films.
But just talk about this one. Okay. No, just kidding. I'm kidding.
Well,
Oh, I see. Okay, very good.
Yes, so we have two opening night films. I mentioned one of the opening night films earlier, Artifact, with Jared Leto and the band 30 Seconds to Mars, when I was talking about music films. The second opening night film is called Venus and Serena, about, guess who, the tennis champions, Venus and Serena Williams. This is a film by a directing duo, Macon Baird and Michelle Major. This is their first feature-length film, although Macon has previously worked producing with Alex Gibney. And they both have a long TV journalism background, having worked with in Peter Jennings' documentary unit at ABC News, where they first met. So Macon and Michelle really got rare access to Venus and Serena Williams, following them over the toughest year of their career, which was last year when Venus Williams was battling what then was a mysterious disease and later became diagnosed as an autoimmune deficiency. And Serena Williams was battling back from a life-threatening pulmonary embolism. You know, neither of them were kind of reaching their accustomed best on the tennis court. And a lot of people were thinking, like, this, you know, could be it for their career. Of course, anyone who follows tennis knows that that was not the final note of their career. They've had quite a dramatic year this year, including winning the doubles gold at the Olympics. So the filmmakers capture all this, and really marvelously. And they are working with a tremendous team. They have their editor is Sam Pollard, who's collaborated for so many years with Spike Lee and is a distinguished director in his own right. They have Wyclef Jean doing music, and it's really a great film. I mean, something else that I think is special about Venus and Serena is it's a great film to put forward for young women. There's a great message in this film about, you know, two women who have achieved remarkable success 100% on their own terms. You know, when you compare that to just so much garbage that's out in the world, what I always say to anyone who has a daughter is, you know, you're competing with a billion-dollar industry whose job is to make your daughter feel bad about herself in order to sell her things. So any piece of media out there that I think has a more empowered message for women, and particularly for young women, something we want to celebrate.
And with these young women, it's not only about their rise to the top of their game, but also that they both had these medical that even someone who has a great deal of success can also still encounter, you know, major setbacks that they can either rise above or, you know, not.
Yeah, listen, there's a lot to chew on in this film. In fact, I don't mean to reduce it to, being just a feel-good message film. It's also just a highly entertaining film. I mean, Venus and Serena Williams are nothing if not utterly compelling characters.
And, I mean, I have to say, eager to see everything you've described that I haven't seen already, because they all seem entertaining, which is certainly not something that you can't forget about when you're programming.
Well, listen, you know, I think that sometimes when people think about documentary film, they think about, you know, qualities of social issue films or advocacy films, or they, you know, bring an expectation that someone is going to be telling them what to do. And by the way, I think that there's a role for filmmaking like that. I think there's a wonderful role for exposing injustice, the way I've talked about before, or for, you know, pointing out ways in which we could do a better job living, as in, you know, films I've shown in other contexts like Food Inc. or Last Call at the Oasis. And I'm partly drawn to documentaries for that kind of truth seeking, but I'm also drawn to documentaries because I think that the quality of drama is often a lot more satisfying than the fiction films that that I see. And 8 years ago, when I started the series Stranger Than Fiction, and was trying to arrive at a title for it, I was, you know, I came about that title, Stranger Than Fiction, to kind of identify the, you know, the quality that stands out to me most about documentary filmmaking, which is that when you, you know, when you see a good one, it's harder to shake from your memory than just about anything else.
Tom Powers, programmer for Doc NYC, Stranger Than Fiction, Toronto International Film Festival, and the Montclair Film Festival. The Doc NYC Film Festival is upon us. It runs from November 8th through the 15th. There is over 100 films in this year's slate. Is that right?
There's over 100 films and events, like 61 feature films, 22 panels and conversations, 32 short films. And, you know, I'll say that, you know, this is a tough year for us. Hurricane Sandy, you know, shut down New York City, including our ticketing system for a week. That's a week when we would normally expect to sell about 40% of our tickets. So we've got a lot to make up for. And if you like documentary films, I hope that you'll come out and take a sampling.
And where can they? Where's the website?
The website is at docnyc.net.
Thanks very much for chatting with me.
Thanks for having me.
Here I am lonely, tired and lonely, crying for home in vain. Just like a butterfly that's caught in the rain, longing for flowers, dreaming of hours back in the sun-kissed lane. Just like a butterfly that's caught in the rain. I know that all of the world is cheery by that old cottage door. Why are my wings so weary? I can't fly anymore. Here I am praying, brokenly singing, give me the sun again. Just like a butterfly that's caught in the rain. It's raining from the sky, and I see a butterfly. I can almost hear him sigh, 'cause he has to stop his flying. I can easily sympathize with those helpless butterflies. I am lonely, tired and lonely, crying for home in vain. Just like a butterfly.